Ready for the show? I'm ready to start.
10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11. Tower clear.
Welcome to ET First Contact Radio. I'm your host, Martin Horst, speaking from the Netherlands, and we have an international show. And today my guest is Dr. Lynn Kitai, and she is an internationally acclaimed physician and health educator who pushed aside her successful medical career to pursue the Phoenix Lights book, an internationally award-winning documentary project. She was leading the cutting-edge era of early disease detection and prevention as chief clinical consultant of the Imagining Prevention Wellness Center at the world-renowned Arizona Heart Institute in Phoenix, Arizona, until coming forward after 7 years of anonymity as a key witness to the historic and still unexplained mass sighting around Arizona on March 13, 1997. And this is exactly 16 years ago. And we have a celebration, or there was a celebration yesterday. So I want to welcome you to the show, Dr. Kitai.
Thank you so much for having me. What a thrill.
Mm. I've been looking forward to this interview with you because right now we're speaking about 16 years after the event that it happened. And can you explain about the witness? You have been a witness yourself 60 years ago.
Yes, actually, my husband, who's also a physician, and I have been witnessing the Phoenix Lights for 2 years before the mass sighting. We had a very close sighting to our home. We live mountainside in Paradise Valley, Arizona. It's very beautiful, and we have a fabulous view of the city skyline, panoramic view, and we know what helicopters and streetlights and car lights and so forth look like for many years. And this was quite different, and it was very close and right under us, actually. We're pretty high on the mountain. And I captured pictures of it, these three orbs in a pyramid formation, and watched them as each one kind of imploded mechanically. There was an intelligence behind it. If we have time, I can get into the details. But I wondered for 2 years because I knew nothing about this topic. I had no interest or knowledge, nor did my husband, what we saw, what this advanced technology was doing right outside our bedroom window, why I got pictures of it, et cetera, and didn't even look into it because I was too busy and just wondered if I'd ever find out what they were. And then they came back 2 months before the mass sighting in January of 1997, but at a distance. And for whatever reason, I felt compelled to document them on film again. And if anyone is around a computer and can go to the Phoenix Lights Network website, go to the photo page. If you Google Phoenix Lights, it usually comes up first or second with Wikipedia, which, by the way, has some misinformation and possibly disinformation. So that's why I came forward after 7 years of anonymity to set the record straight. But at any rate, getting back to the sighting 2 months before the mass sighting, I happened to catch the exact same mile-wide phenomena that I would also capture on video during the mass sighting, head-on, turning into a V-shape in the same exact location. And what's interesting is it was so unnerving, and you can see the pictures posted there of the close sighting as well as this sighting, that I called around the next morning because I figured there must be a logical explanation. Someone else had to see this. It was massive. And I found air traffic controllers at Sky Harbor International Airport who saw the same thing at the same time. And they were excited that I saw it, and they were very forthcoming initially, and shared with me that it actually popped up over Class B restricted airspace. There's a 30-mile radius around the center of the airport. And anyone that comes into that airspace, particularly 1,000 feet altitude as these lights were, must call into the tower. And so they were alarmed. They immediately looked on radar, did not show up on radar. But when they took their binoculars, their high-powered binoculars to look, what they described were six points of light totally equidistant from each other, massive span over a mile wide, that seemed to be attached to something. But they couldn't quite see what they were attached to. And you would hear this over again and again and again during the mass sighting, that turned against the wind. And one of them was a meteorologist, so he knew what he was talking about. And then slowly elevated and moved behind South Mountain as a unit in synchrony. And when I asked, so what was it? There was silence. And then one of the air traffic controllers said, beats me. And I said, you're air traffic controllers. You're supposed to know what's in our airspace, and you don't know what these were, which really, you know, not only piqued my interest, but I happened to capture 35-millimeter photographs at the same time that they were seeing this turning, which is pretty significant in retrospect. But at any rate, I kept on photographing these lights, as other people were, by the way, up until and including March 13th. And for anyone out there that's not familiar with the mass sighting that occurred throughout Arizona and beyond. On March 13th, 1997, while the Hale-Bopp comet was very clear in the northwest sky, thousands of people statewide were outside either looking up at the sky or going along with their business or going to the mall or golfing or playing baseball or whatever, when they also caught a glimpse of a mile to 2 mile wide in some very credible reports. Either these orbs, these balls of light, huge balls of light, and some people were actually directly underneath them as they passed overhead, very low altitude, and described them as canisters of swimming light when they looked up into these cylinders, or craft. and I have to set the record straight here again. Not only were there multiple things happening throughout the state, including these orb formations, as well as multiple craft traversing the entire state for many, many hours. The media and certainly debunkers would have us believe there was one or two events. There were many events. And there are multiple craft, as I said, that were actually documented and illustrated by Larry Lowe and documented by Michael Tanner and Bill Hamilton, investigators that took hundreds of reports over a 12-year period of time from the National UFO Reporting Center, from Arizona MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, the Village Labs, which was a clearinghouse here locally, as well as the former councilwoman and vice mayor, Frances Barwood, who was the only elected official who innocently asked for an investigation during a May meeting months later and was plastered to the wall. I was very happy to stay anonymous for 7 years. But at any rate, they compiled what multiple people saw at the same time and deciphered there were 8 or 9 different craft that people saw. Now, whether it was one craft that could morph into looking differently or the perspective from where someone was standing or perhaps a parade, which is what the investigators feel it was, because there were multiple craft seen at different times at the same time throughout the state, we may never know. But there were many events going on, actually starting the first reports on March 13th, even though there was a big event up at the Navajo Nation the night before, which we can talk about. But on March 13th, we have the initial report starting at 3 p.m. here in Arizona. 5:30, we have Native Americans that were seeing them in New Mexico, and the same phenomena were being witnessed in California about 7:15. 11:30, we have a report from two commercial airline pilots, different airlines that were seeing the phenomena over Nevada. We actually have a call at 3 a.m. This is really interesting. From an alleged crewman from Luke Air Force Base. And this is while, you know, the sightings are continuing. The bulk of them, of course, were between 8 and 10 when most people were outside. That's why we had the bulk of the reports at that time. But at 3 a.m., there was a call to the National UFO Reporting Center from an alleged crewman from Luke Air Force Base who reported in great detail, and this was all recorded. We have part of it in our documentary, and of course I talk about it in the book, that there was this massive object hovering right over the center of Phoenix, 7th Avenue and Indian School, and military jets were sent out, whether to intercept or get gun camera film, which I've heard they did get. And as they got close, the lights started to dim. And as they got a little closer, the object just blinked out, totally disappeared. And this crewman was describing the fact that he helped one of the pilots out of his aircraft when it got back to Luke Air Force Base, which was closed down for the night, by the way, because the pilot was so shaken up by it. So something really extraordinary was happening throughout the March 13th. And then at 5:30, we have a report by crewmen, Boeing crewmen, coming into the airport that described one of these mile-wide objects hovering right over their tarmac. So this continued for many, many hours, and there were many, many events statewide. And, you know, when people talk about the explanations for 5 months, and it's interesting how the story unfolded, because for 5 months there was no investigation, no explanation at all. It was just uncanny. And even when the former Councilwoman Vice Mayor Frances Barwood asked innocently, because her constituents and media were asking her why there wasn't an investigation, she mentioned it in a May council meeting, and she was just plastered by the media, especially the newspaper with jokes and all this. You know, I have to say, until there was the June 18th, that was the first time that it was opened up to international acknowledgement by a front page USA Today article, June 18th, 1997. And we were deluged by media from all over the world overnight. And in those days, there wasn't mass media, social media, there wasn't, Facebook or whatever. And yet overnight, because of the front page USA Today article, by the next morning, it was on every morning show here, and Dan Rather and Peter Jennings and so forth. And by late morning, the former governor, Fife Symington, called a press conference to say that they found the culprit, of the Arizona mass sighting. And everybody was pretty excited, and I certainly, for one, was looking for a logical explanation. And that afternoon, he, and everybody took it seriously, by the way, that afternoon, he comes marching out, one of his aides, with a giant alien head costume and made a mockery of the whole thing, which really offended many, many people, particularly parents who were with children. And this thing went right over their heads. This was rooftop level. Some people saw it glide right over their heads. Other people saw it take off at a blink speed without a sound. That was what was so eerie to everyone. It was not a sound, and it didn't even displace the air. And other people saw these orbs detach from the main object, go out into the environment, and then redock with it. So it was incredible technology, to be sure, that I haven't seen in 16 years. But at any rate, after this press conference with the former governor, that kind of put a lid on things, and I called every military base. I have to tell you, Martin, I mean, I really tried so hard to not only be scientific, but also to do my homework. And I spoke with higher ups at every military base here, and they had no idea. They were just as curious as everyone else. And then suddenly, I get a call a month after the USA Today article on July 24th from one of the heads of PR at the Air National Guard. And she says, "Oh, Dr. Lynn, I think we know what those lights were back in March." And I said, "You do?" And she says, "Yes, do you believe that nobody ever looked at the log for visiting Air National Guard? And the Maryland Air National Guard was in town sending off flares in Operation Snowbird," which I later found meant diversionary tactical maneuvers in military terms, and it has certainly been a diversion ever since they made the announcement. But at any rate, she said, "That must be what some people saw." That's exactly what she said. And I said, "Well, wait a minute. When was the Maryland Air National Guard in town?" And she said, "March 1st to the 15th. And I said, "Well, were they in town in January?" She said, "Oh, no." I said, "Are you sure?" She said, "Absolutely not." I said, "Well, I have 35-millimeter photographs of the same exact phenomena in the same exact location 2 months before the mass sighting, confirmed by air traffic controllers the morning after that January sighting and again the morning after March 13th sighting, that confirmed that these were hovering at 1,000 feet altitude in Class B restricted airspace." And she says, "You never told me that." And then I said, "And you're trying to say that flares," and I had educated myself to anything logical, including military illumination flares, that drift and drop haphazardly in seconds with the wind and have huge smoke trails illuminated by the flare itself and illuminate the area around it. That's what they're meant to do. And not one witness to the true unknowns, Phoenix Lights, described any of that. And I said, "You're trying to say that flares that can keep a formation traverse the entire state in a rock-solid, equidistant, mile-wide V formation for hours?" And she says, "I have a call coming in. I'll get back to you." Well, I'm still waiting.
Well, that's amazing. So to put a long story short, Dr. Kitai, I think right now it's time for the truth to come out for the whole public, the whole population of the entire planet. So the Phoenix Light is by far of the most important sighting ever recorded in history, in recent history. But what's your idea about the citizens' hearing on disclosure that will be coming forth at the end of April, the beginning of May? Do you think that the mainstream media will pick this up?
I hope so. You know, there's so much more to this story, Martin. I ended up with a 750-page journal 4 years later after I pushed my entire successful medical career aside to get to the bottom of this, to try to find a logical source of meaning. And I knew nothing about this topic, but the first step is to be open-minded and at least take a look at the data, because when you start looking, you start finding very credible, compelling data that speaks for itself. And then one of the things that I just have to interject is that after they came out with the flare explanation, myself included and many other people were saying, if it's flares, fine, reenact it. And I knew that I personally had photographs not only after the mass sighting that substantiated that these things were around, but I had them before, 2 months before and 2 years before, to say that whoever did it several times. So if it's military flares, do it again. Well, it wasn't until right before the third anniversary of the mass sighting, on March 7th, 2000, they announced that they were having three Air National Guards come in town to send off flares so everybody could see the Phoenix lights. Now, I don't know whether they thought it would confuse the issue or the people forgot, whatever, but everyone, you know, took that seriously, and we were out there watching, and I have to say that from the get-go, their flare deployment was nothing like the real deal. In fact, their failed exercise to try to reenact the Phoenix lights really put the nail in the coffin to the witnesses who knew, you know, unequivocally that the flares were not the Phoenix lights, and the Phoenix lights were definitely not flares. And to this day, I have to say, Martin, that it has never been reenacted, nor has it been explained, and they've never even addressed the craft that people saw statewide. Now, you asked me about the serious documentary that's coming through. I am very honored that Dr. Stephen Greer, who I have known shortly after I started studying this phenomena, I really searched for credible people that were out there that I could confer with, because the more I looked, the more I found that, whoa, this has been happening since human documentation began. This is also something that's happening worldwide, and other countries are much more open to these phenomena as being unearthly. And even right after the 10th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights event, the former governor, Symington, who mocked the sighting, bravely came forward to say that he actually saw it and that it was otherworldly. So I think with mass media and movies like Sirius, which I am honored to be a part of, I did a wonderful interview with them, which will be part, Phoenix Lights will be part of the Sirius documentary. I hope other people, even though it's spelled C-S-I-R-I-U-S, that other people that aren't as informed will take it seriously and actually look at it. And that's why I came forward after 7 years of anonymity. I mean, I had a 750-page journal of such compelling data of the history of these phenomena, of other similar sightings worldwide, and what happened here and as the story unfolded. And also, which if we have time to get into, the connection between all unexplained phenomena, which I found very fascinating, that, you know, as an educator, and I produce video and workbook curriculums for the reality of vital health issues, such as AIDS and teen pregnancy and substance abuse for youth worldwide, Discovery Education distributes my programs, how could I not share the reality of this vital subject? So I ultimately squeezed the best of what I found into the book, 250 pages, The Phoenix Lights, A Skeptic's Discovery That We Are Not Alone, and we're now in our third edition, and I share even more information that I never thought I would share. But I think it's time to just get everything out in the open, and hopefully it'll help not only the public at a grassroots level to understand what happened here in Arizona, but also hopefully science will come on board, because I don't know what these things are, but I know that they are. And it's time, and I say this all the time, it's time we get this out in the open and just address it and accept it and study it so we can move forward and not only find out who's driving these things, but also move forward on our own evolution. Because Native cultures, and that's really important to take a look at how Native indigenous cultures have been so open to these phenomena, to other intelligences all around us, and even the orbs that we see as the Phoenix Lights have been described in their cultures right here in Arizona. In fact, they're etched in stone in petroglyphs. The same thing that my husband and I saw in a pyramid formation, three orbs, is etched on South Mountain right here in Phoenix. And the Estrellas, I was told by the Native cultures that live in that area, was named the Estrella Mountain Range because of the stories and the history for centuries of these phenomena showing up in that area. And the Spaniards named it the Estrella Mountains, and they've also believed that there is a gateway or a portal in that area. And if you look at my data, and in science we like to look at repeatability, and if you look at my photo data on the photo page of the Phoenix Lights Network website, you'll see over and over again these phenomena keep popping up in that same exact area that they believe that there is a portal or a gateway. I leave that open. I can't say definitively, but again, there's so much compelling data that speaks for itself. I just hope people take a look at it. And then after I came forward in 2004 with the book, I was approached by filmmakers, and one of them, Steve Lance, who his parents live here, his father's a doctor, the physician that we know, was very persistent and very knowledgeable about the topic. And while I was at the Arizona Heart Institute, he, and working 7 to 7 and doing radio programs like this into the night, and Barnes & Noble and Border book tours on the weekend, he wanted to do a documentary, which I wanted to do also, but I really didn't have time. And he said, I'm coming with my equipment in May, and we're going to start production. I said, whoa. I said, I stayed anonymous for 7 years. I don't know, first of all, if the professors, and again, I went to extreme lengths to have my data explained to me at university level, University of Arizona Optical Science Department, Consciousness Study Department, Arizona State University Geology, Anthropology, Mathematics, Astronomy Departments, as well as the renowned Brooks Institute of Photography in Santa Barbara, California, and Navy Optical Physicists. And across the board, no one could give me an answer to what my data was. They could say what they weren't, but we don't have the technology yet to definitively define what these things are. But that doesn't mean they're not real. We may just be looking on the AM dial for an FM frequency. In fact, if someone told you a year before the microscope was discovered that there's tiny microorganisms all around us, they would have put them away. Well, now we know that there are zillions of microorganisms, living entities all around us, even in our body. Some are pathogens, some are beneficial. We've learned to live with it. And just as we don't see these tiny entities, we don't see radio waves and so forth, it doesn't mean they're not real. So, you know, it's time we move forward and start studying these things seriously. And, you know, when I went to the professors that I worked with, and I had no idea if they would say yes or no to the documentary, and also to witnesses that had emailed me in confidence, and I take that very seriously as a physician. And every single one, except one who came on board later, said that they would immediately, that they were excited about it and they thought it was important to do. And once we started, you know, production, I have to tell you, within a month or so, it became very evident that I had to make a choice. And we completed the documentary. We won over a dozen international film festival awards that is unheard of for a documentary, especially one of this genre. And we keep, you know, really updating it every year. We add bonus features. Astronaut Edgar Mitchell is in it. He's fabulous. And in the bonus features, he also talks about the UFO cover-up, as well as pilots and military and a 911 police operator that came up to me at a presentation. And she said, you know, I hear that the police said that they got very few calls that night. And I said, that's what they've been saying publicly. And she said, well, I just retired and I'm here to tell you that we got hundreds and hundreds of calls that night. Would you like to hear about it? And I said, are you kidding? And she's in the documentary too, and I talk about her testimony in the book. And so this has been evolving and evolving, and as it evolves, to answer your question again about disclosure, I think the more that social media is out there, the more there's programs like this, and I really am so pleased and honored to be speaking with you today across the world, because the more people find out about our mass sighting, which has become historic, not only in the annals of ufology, but also in the annals of human history, as the most documented and probably the most important mass sighting in modern history, if not of all time, because as more credible witnesses come forward, such as military and pilots and former Governor Symington and so forth, the more the credibility is lent to the fact that something extraordinary is going on in our skies, not only, and actually around us too, which we can get into, but not only you know, the Phoenix Lights, but there are so many things worldwide and that need to be addressed. Most things can be explained, but a small percentage cannot. And there are definitely some advanced aerial phenomena happening worldwide that, you know, are now being documented on cell phones and shared in a blink of an eye on social media, which just makes it that much more credible when you really look at the data. Unfortunately, and I have to add that, you know, with hoaxing and with misidentification, it also muddies the water. But, you know, the more people really look at the credible data, and I've tried to put something out there that is really, like I said, I squeezed the best of what I found into the original book, and we added more with the latest edition, the third edition. you know, it speaks for itself. So I hope people actually look at it and go to our website. I have to tell you, the Phoenix Lights Network website, and it's free, is packed with information. The photo page, the GAP page, G-A-P, which has the illustrations of the multiple craft that we're seeing here during the mass sighting, and the news page, it's really loaded with information that is very compelling. And you know, I hope people will just take a look at it and consider the data and decide for themselves.
Well, that's wonderful. And the website is called, by the way, for your convenience, it's, I think, important to share with the listener, www.thephoenixlight.net. And my guest is Dr. Lijn Kitai, and she's a medical doctor, and she is the key witness of the Phoenix Lights, and she has been explaining about events happening prior to the event on March 13, 1997. She said that a lot of things happened also in January, and if you're new to the show, you can call us. If you have questions, you can call in on the number toll-free 888-627-6008 for U.S. and Canada. And if you're calling from Europe or another continent, it's 001-530-327-7602. And you can find those phone numbers, by the way, on the website of bbsradio.com. So welcome back, Lijn.
Yes, Martin, can I interject one thing? Because I know that, you know, you're very interested in ET consciousness and so forth and contact. And, you know, I hope people do pick up the latest edition of the Phoenix Lights at Skeptics Discovery that we are not alone, because I share for the first time the analysis by Dr. Bruce McAbee, Navy optical physicist, way back in 1988 of the close sighting photographs, which he meticulously researched and came to a conclusion that was quite riveting, if we have time to get into it, that I am sharing for the first time in the book. He noticed some amazing factors in the pictures that made him come to the conclusion, after we did some experimentation to confirm that, that my pictures show, and actually he presented it in 1999 at the MUFON, Mutual UFO Network International Symposium in Washington, D.C., as the first authenticated photographic evidence ever of missing time. Now, if we have time, I'll get into that. But the one thing I wanted to say about the ET contact is that as I was interviewing witnesses, not only did they tell me, and this is such an intriguing aspect of this whole phenomena to me personally, and I think for a lot of other listeners out there, not only was there a transformation in real time, a positive transformation, because and long term, which I'll get into in a second, but in real time, the movie Independence Day was real popular. It came out like several months before the mass sighting, and we're so inundated. We address this in the documentary with the scare tactics, the fear, the threat. And I have to say right here that in 16 years, to my knowledge, and I'm pretty closely aligned with this investigation, there has not been not one report in 16 years of harm, threat, or abduction associated with the Phoenix Lights. Can't speak for other things, but that's very telling, especially when we had witnesses such as young kids tell us that they were initially scared. They were jumping up and down, Independence Day, as this mile-wide deformation or craft were coming towards them. They were scared, and rightly so, because our mindset is just so attuned to that kind of scenario from Hollywood and the media. And yet, as it got closer, not only witnesses, but not only children, but the adult witnesses as well, a calmness came over everyone. A connectedness to the phenomena. And some people even got telepathic messages not to be afraid and not to worry. And as it passed by, the children wanted to run after it. I mean, that was in real time. That was the positive transformation that was happening. Long term, which was really interesting, not only has it affected people at such a deep soul level, it changed people's lives forever that saw the Phoenix Lights. I hear it over and over and over again. I mean, some people went to such extremes as to change their eating habits and become vegetarian. Others went into the peace movement and the environmental movement. I mean, it really touched people at a deep level. Flares and balloons and blimps and Chinese lanterns don't do that, okay? But the other aspect of this that was really intriguing is that some of the witnesses that I spoke to shared that they had had near-death experiences as children that was reawakened by the mass sighting. And I found that really, really intriguing because I did too. And if you get the book, you'll read about in detail. I shared for the first time in 2004 of my near-death experience as a child, which is quite riveting in and of itself. But what got me is that, whoa, you know, if there's other people that had this reawakening by the Phoenix Lights, maybe there's a connection between all unexplained phenomena, whether it's near-death experience, out-of-body experience, or unexplained aerial phenomena that have a mystical light associated with the experience. And again, when I started looking, I started finding very credible data at the university level. The University of Connecticut, Dr. Kenneth Ring, wrote this very thick 3-inch book called The Omega Project, which addresses the connection between all unexplained phenomena. And there's other scientists as well, Dr. Raymond Fowler and Dr. Bruce Grayson and others of note that also were looking into this possibility. And I laid it out very simply in the book. Not only is there a similarity in the events that happen during the experience, whether it's near-death experience, out-of-body, or unexplained aerial phenomena, but the most poignant thing is the after effect, the awakening, the enlightenment that happens with an individual who truly experiences an unexplained phenomena, what I start calling an up, because it is so positive. Now, you know, everybody comes from a different background, from a different upbringing, from a different belief system, different worldview. Some people can't deal with this. Some people don't want to deal with that. And that's okay. That's okay. Everyone in their own time. But now there's information out there. They, you know, with the book and the documentary, and there's lots more out there, and with the Sirius documentary coming out shortly, that will hopefully impact the mass consciousness and raise awareness to the, which actually, I have to tell you, Martin, I mean, ever since the Roswell sighting and the goings-on, which were quite frequent in the skies during the 40s and 50s and so forth, we have been almost indoctrinated with this information, maybe some of it's true, whatever, that have gotten us to a point where one of the great scientists actually who headed the Project Blue Book, which was the only public study of UFOs. There were others that were behind the scenes, but the Project Blue Book was the only public study, was Dr. Al Hynek, and he was plucked from the head of astronomy at Northwestern University, and he was put in the position of the head of Project Blue Book and told, which he shared shortly before his passing in the mid-1980s, that he was told not to scare the public, not to panic the public, to, you know, whatever the true unknowns were, to kind of brush them under the carpet and, you know, explain the easily explainable things, and also talk about swamp gas. He came up with that one. And also he came up with the expression close encounters. In fact, he's even in the movie. But he made a very poignant statement that science happens in threes. The first stage is complete disbelief. The second stage is, well, it might be so. And the last and final phase is, I knew it all the time. And I think we're coming closer and closer to that final stage. And with more and more public, displays, more and more social media addressing this topic, and radio programs such as this, which I applaud, as well as documentaries that are coming out and books, hopefully the consciousness will be raised, the mass consciousness will be raised to the point where we'd be accepting of what's really happening out there, of other possibilities. And also let me interject this. I'm sorry that I keep going here, but there's so much to.
It's wonderful. What you're sharing is crucial, Dr. Kitai. It's really crucial, and I give you all the time you need to complete this, because I can ask all kinds of specific questions, but it's very interesting what you're sharing, so please continue.
Well, I just wanted to make the point that now with the Hubble and the Kepler telescopes, which certainly we've just become aware in the last couple decades, they have shown us that there are billions, if not trillions, of other galaxies out there, not just the one Milky Way galaxy that we have, that we're in, but trillions of other galaxies with trillions of stars with their own planets. I mean, we're talking trillions of possibilities out there for life. And we know that amino acids are out there and other brilliant building blocks of life. So, and our one Milky Way galaxy is about 14 to 16 billion years old. Our solar system is a very young solar system. It's only 4 to 6 billion years old. So there's scientists out there now postulating that there could be intelligent, sentient entities out there billions of years ahead of us, billions of years ahead of us. And, when you think about that awesome thought, okay, what have they figured out and how to not only come here and possibly even be here in other dimensions, because that's certainly, and if we have time, I can get into our close sighting, what that seemed to be other dimensional, or interdimensional. But that's why I'm sharing the missing time data now, because it's hard data that hopefully science will take a look at and hopefully will open the window a little bit. Now that quantum physics and quantum mechanics are describing the and speculating that there may be 10 or 11 different dimensions out there in string theory, in the bubble theory. And if that's true, if there are other times and spaces along with ours, then why is it such a leap to think that there may be other intelligences in those other dimensions that we get glimpses of if we're open to them or invited? So that's why I'm sharing that data now, and hopefully it will help open the door a little bit to those possibilities, and I hope science will take a look at it. And in the meantime, I hope that the general public will just open their minds to those possibilities, and I think that's happening more and more now, don't you?
I certainly do, and I think also what you're saying about science is true, that they're discovering how many billions of galaxies there are. But the problem is, I think, why the large corporations and governments do not want to disclose this information is because those objects or flying saucers or whatever you name them, they have a high advanced technology how they travel. And they don't use fossil fuels, of course. And I think that's the main reason is the financial background of the oil companies who are influencing politics and not to disclose this information, because they all travel on free energy.
What you're saying is really something that many people that are knowledgeable about this subject matter have come to the conclusion that there are entities out there. And I have to say, just for my input here, that what I'm doing, and I don't even get into the cover-up or whatever, because I'm working at a grassroots level, not only with the book and documentary, but now with a curriculum for youth, which is my passion, which I've been doing for 35 years on this topic. It's really going to be tremendous. I'm working with wonderful, wonderful teachers. We have a pilot program right now in one of the charter schools, and we're going to be getting it into a college prep high school very shortly. And we have an illustrator from Disney who is just fabulous, and it's called Out of the Box, The Adventures of Sue F.O., Field Observer, and Hugh, UFO, who's the alien. And we're going to try to, give it to the kids from the human and alien aspect, and they thirst for this knowledge. But, getting back to the military and government reason for why they're not forthcoming, there's so many rumors out there. And again, I'm working at a grassroots level, but it just makes more and more sense that there certainly are entities out there that, you know, have some kind of a stronghold on possibly the technology of these things, don't want this to get out there for whatever reason, and have kind of put a lid on it. Because the other side of this, and Dr. Astronaut Edgar Mitchell will tell you when he describes it in our documentary in the bonus features, that, you know, besides the panic issue, the other issue is that, you know, that they just don't want to get this out there because it may change society. And certainly, once there is disclosure, true disclosure, you know, we have to admit that there are going to be people, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, because who's preparing the general public for this? And as a physician, I certainly can appreciate that side of it. There are going to be many people out there that will panic. There's going to be many people that have either closed themselves off to the possibilities, and once you do that, by the way, you close yourself off to the energies that are possible, to the potentials out there that are mind-boggling, that when you're open to them, and I've seen it in medicine, the healing potentials that we have to heal ourselves, and I get into that in the book. But once you close yourself off to that, and it's a choice, you know, those people and those that just aren't knowledgeable about this may panic, and it will change the different entities. Richard Dolan wrote a very amazing book that goes into after disclosure, AD, after disclosure, which really addresses some of the things that may happen once we truly know that we're not alone in this universe, and possibly not alone right here on Earth. So there will be changes, and some of them will be positive, and I trust that some of them will not. But the more and more the public, and you know, again, it goes back to the same thing, the more the public and the mass media addresses this topic credibly and reasonably and professionally and realistically, the more we'll be prepared for what's ahead. And you know, that for one is my part in all this, is to help to prepare the public, and certainly youth, and I'm very excited about the curriculum, for what's ahead.
Yes, my dear friend. And what I want to ask you, what's the title of your book, and how can people get a hold of your book? Because I think that's important to share.
Thank you. The book is called The Phoenix, and it's the third edition now. The latest edition is The Phoenix Light, A Skeptic's Discovery That We Are Not Alone. And it is offered in many bookstores, and Amazon.com usually has the best discount, I have to say, and Kindle, and Barnes & Noble, and also, if you'd like a signed copy, on our website, thephoenixlights.net, you can get it through there. Again, the best discount is at Amazon.com, and they do have it in UK as well as in the Americas. It's all out there. I really did the homework for everybody, not only myself, to learn what was going on and try to find a logical explanation, which I have yet to find, by the way. But as I did that, I gathered so much information that, you know, it's just amazing to me that things just kept coming to me, including quotes by presidents and CIA and military and pilots that I've also included in the book that substantiate that something is truly going on beyond our own reality. And, you know, it's time we get this out there, and time we look at it and study it and move forward in our own evolution.
Yes, and I think it will be a quantum leap in our evolution when this comes common knowledge.
Absolutely. And also the documentary, I should add, there's three versions now of the documentary, the original, and they're all the same documentary. They just have different bonus features. The original has our awards on the front, and this is a collaboration. And I have to say, too, which still amazes me, that Steve Lance and I did everything together. It was just us, but I could not have done it with the input, of course, of all the witnesses and the professionals that came forward, the experts and the investigators that contributed. There are so many people that contributed to this. It's just so heart-feeling and really a dedicated effort by so many people. And it's The Phoenix Lights, We Are Not Alone, Vanguard Cinema, Anderson Digital are now distributing the other two documentary versions. One is called The Phoenix Lights Beyond Top Secret. And I just have the Phoenix Lights Beyond Top Secret. On the cover, I put one of the nine crafts that was described statewide. And the reason I put that one, and it's a very odd-looking craft, I have to say, because each light is made up of three lights. And the reason I used that one on the latest edition of the documentary is because while I was doing my research, I discovered that 1 month before our mass sighting, on February 19th, 1997, there was another mass sighting, but in St. Petersburg, Russia. And a couple of the civilians actually got video of it. And one of the videos, when I saw what the illustrators had come up with the Phoenix Lights craft, it blew me away, because one of the crafts that was illustrated was exactly like one of the videos from St. Petersburg, Russia. So I thought that that was appropriate to put on that video. But again, all the videos, all the documentaries are the same. It's just the bonus features. We've added some more as the years have gone by. So I welcome people to take a look at that, too, because it's an overview. And for anybody that's just learning about this topic, I want it to be a gentle overview, just as these phenomena, whatever they are, wherever they're from, are touching people at a very deep level in a gentle, non-threatening way to their presence, and also waking us up to the fact that we're not alone. The documentary is a very gentle overview of the topic, certainly focusing on the Phoenix Lights mass sighting, but we go into so much more as kind of a, you know, an overview of the history and how it affected people and the media and the message, which is a very profound message, I have to say. Would you like to know what that is? Would you like to know what the message is?
I think it's important to ask you, Dr. Pichai, if people order the DVD, they have to be sure that they choose PEL or NTSC. Can they choose between those formats?
Right. That is a very good question, and I believe that Anderson Digital does come in PAL, but I'll have to look into that. I know that we were talking about that, and if there is interest there, they certainly will do that. I'll get back to you on that one.
No, yeah, but because if you order a DVD for Europe, you use the PAL system, and if you're ordering in the States, you have to use the NTSC system.
Correct. That's a very good question, and I will look into it. But again, if we have, a large interest, I'm sure that the distributor would welcome that. So, you know, and I will ask them about that, because more and more people worldwide are certainly interested in the Phoenix Lights, and they should be able to watch it. And just to go back, you know, there was a very profound message that was given to not only people who experience the Phoenix Lights and other unexplained aerial phenomena, but it's universal. And if you read the data of near-death experiencers, millions of people worldwide who have had that experience, have been brought back from death or near-death, keep coming back with the same message, which is, you know, if nothing else, I mean, I came forward after 7 years of anonymity for a number of reasons, not only because it was so frustrating that the official explanation that people were accepting, if they weren't here, was that the Phoenix Lights were flares. That was pretty frustrating in and of itself. But the other thing too, not only to let people know that they're not alone and they're not crazy, even though most things can be explained, when somebody has an unexplained phenomena experience, an up experience, it's real to them. And if you don't share it, it festers, and that's not healthy. It's healing and cathartic if you share it, even with one other person. And I welcome people to email me through the website and just share your experience with me if you feel that you can't share it with anyone else, because it is very healing and very cathartic to do so. And the other reason as well is to share the message. And the message is, the bottom line, is that whoever is doing this is not only trying to wake us up to their presence in a very gentle way, but also to the fact, and this is the message over and over again, is to wake up to what you're doing to yourselves and your planet before it's too late. And if that's not an important reason to come forward, I don't know what is.
It certainly is. Dr. Kitai, we have to end the show now because there's a show after this. I want to thank you very much for being on the show. Your story was really very fascinating. If people are interested in the Phoenix Lights, they should go to www.thephoenixlights.net. And this is ET First Contact Radio. My guest was Dr. Lijn Tai. And if you want to give a donation for my show to let it continue, please go to bbsradio.com/ET First Contact Radio and make a kind paper donation so that I can continue. And next week I will have another interesting guest. So, Dr. Kitai, thank you very much for being on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and good luck with your endeavors. And also, people that are out there worldwide, we have a Phoenix Lights Network Facebook page. And I welcome you to join us there because I post updates all the time and keep people informed of what the latest information is concerning the Arizona mass sighting and similar sightings worldwide. Because now when people look up to the sky and see something similar, they say, whoa, there's the Phoenix Lights. And that's really exciting.
Yes. If I can call you back in a couple of minutes, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, my friends, and until next week. Namaste.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.